Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Karen Geis, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs and Acting Military Health System Chief Information Officer. Dr. Geis, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
My pleasure.
Well, any conversation that we talk about military health, the military health system, has to begin with electronic health records and the work you guys are doing with VA. Let's get a status check. Let's jump right in. Tell us how the initiative is going to create that integrated system.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this is one of those very challenging and but very rewarding things that we're doing with VA. And as your listeners probably know, the Department of Defense has a long history in developing and deploying global electronic health records. We began as early as the 1980s when we fielded our first computerized physician order entry application. And then by 2006, we were fielding our current electronic health record for outpatient encounters. We're now on this very exciting journey with VA to create a new integrated electronic health record. And this is really a milestone to be celebrated. It's going to be the first coordinated effort with the Department of Veterans Affairs to really invent a truly integrated electronic health record across the two departments. The team has done great work in getting some of the infrastructure and the necessary organizational pieces outlined and in place in order to actually carry out all of the various activities that are going to be associated with creating the new IHR. Some of the things I wanted to kind of highlight, Dr. Barclay Butler was appointed the director of the Interagency Program Office, or the IPO. The IPO was an entity that was created by Congress a few years ago to help the two departments better integrate their efforts along electronic health records. So we're very excited that he has joined the team. He used to be the Chief Information Officer for the Army Surgeon General, so he knows our side of the business pretty well. And he's been involved in corporate leadership positions in major technology corporations since he left the military. So we're very excited that he's joined the team and is going to be leading up the joint effort through the IPO. The IPO, just to make sure everybody understands what it is, it's the Integrated Program Executive Office for the IHR systems, the various capabilities that will come about as a result of the work and the various initiatives outlined for our success. So it also includes not only the electronic health record, but the virtual lifetime electronic record. This was an initiative of President Obama about 3 years ago. We commonly refer to it as VLER. And what this stream of information is really to make sure that from the time of accession into the military, all through the military career and throughout the veteran's life, information will be available and immediately usable for the various benefits and events along that career and lifetime pathway. So we're pleased that the VLER Health is part of that, and I think is poised for success through the IPO. Now the IPO is really working on sort of the new stuff, so the new integrated electronic health record. We still have to maintain and support our legacy systems on both sides, so the VA as well as the Department of Defense. So each department is still maintaining their legacy systems throughout this entire development of new stuff and then figuring out how to transition our legacy systems over to the new electronic health record.
All right, so a lot going on. Obviously, getting the IPO stood up, getting that going is a big accomplishment. Are there certain specific areas that that's going to focus on? You said the new stuff, but what does that mean?
What the new stuff means is really creating the new framework for the electronic health record, and the path that's been selected is a systems-oriented architecture. So having that sort of plug-and-play capability within the SOA suite format is the end game that we would like to move to. What that means is our individual capabilities then become more like applications that you can use in an integrated manner, which also has some long-term benefits to both departments in that if you change something within one of the packages, you don't have to change the entire suite. It's not, it's less dependent on other parts of the applications. So we're very excited about it. We're also leveraging open source technology so that things will be put into the open source, the Osera framework, so we can engage a broader group of developers, hopefully, to help us as we go along.
And now you, as the acting CIO of the Military Health System, you have to deal with both the new stuff and make sure that your current legacy systems continue to run smoothly?
Correct.
And what's that mean for you from a CIO standpoint? Do you have to worry about things like, do we have enough storage? Should we update this, or should we transition sooner than later? How do you balance those two things? Because I'm sure that you'll come to a time when you may have to spend a few $100,000, a few $1 million on a legacy system that, you know, is maybe right around the corner in the new one.
But this is one of the really interesting things that we've discovered. You know, part of our challenge is to maintain our legacy systems until we have a complete new electronic health record. But we don't want to delay the deployment of an electronic health record, a new one, until, you know, we've got the entire thing scoped. So what we're trying to pull off here is kind of an iterative way of adding the new components or capabilities of an electronic health record and then graying out to that similar capability within our existing system. We're working on how to actually do that. How would you execute that? How would you kind of, if there were a pharmacy application that was available tomorrow, what would we do then? What would be our response in our legacy systems that would, to kind of brown out that particular pharmacy piece in our legacy systems and allow that new capability to come into play without actually the providers feeling like anything has really changed. We want to make this as seamless for our providers as we possibly can so they get the benefit of the new but without any consequences, if you will, about keeping the legacy system kind of in the background for a time until we're very comfortable that it's safe to kind of turn all those switches off.
I imagine you guys aren't that close to be able to move from one legacy application to a new application, or is that closer than maybe some people think?
We're just in the process of ironing all of that out. We've had a series of transition planning events here at the Department of Defense to really understand the implications of the new framework. Because if you remember, with the new SOA architecture, it changes the architecture of all of our platforms. So it's not just about the legacy system either and moving that in from the new IHR, but it's about all of our other systems that we support and how they fit into the new framework. So some of our systems will be fine because they were kind of built with a SOA architecture in mind, so they're very close to that now and will be easily put into a new framework. Others are going to take a little bit of work to try to figure out exactly how we do that and maintain the consistency for the provider, because it really is about taking care of the patient. We want to make sure that providers have the information they need readily at their fingertips to take the best care of our patients that they possibly can.
And in the end, I think that's key. I mean, you want a electronic health records that provides doctors and nurses with the information to get to that end result, which is the care for veterans and current military servicemen and women. There was a recent meeting between Secretary Panetta and Secretary Shinseki about this electronic health record effort. Give me a sense of, did they decide what's the next steps for the program? I think they meet, I think, quarterly or at least a couple times a year, and this comes up.
They are driving forces behind the two departments and the effort to actually make this happen. They are fully engaged and very knowledgeable and have very in-depth discussions with each other about, you know, how this is going, the steps that are necessary to get us to the end state. They've had, you know, iterative briefings in the meantime, but they really have honed in and focused on, you know, when can we have early capabilities, where do we need additional support, and they certainly having their attention to detail is critical as we move this forward.
All right, very good. I think, you know, getting that buy-in from the top, as I've heard, especially around this, was so important because this ended up being in part of that forcing function to make, if you will, DOD and VA to work better together. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more details about the integrated health system, and then we're going to talk more about your priorities over the next 6 or 9 months. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Karen Geis, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs and Acting Military Health Systems Chief Information Officer.
Disabled American Veterans is dedicated to one single purpose, Building Better Lives for America's Disabled Veterans, May 18th through the 20th, in the company of the vintage B-25 Mitchell Bomber, DAV brings its message of support for veterans to the Joint Base Andrews Air Show. In its modern-day mission with DAV, the B-25 serves as a reminder of the sacrifices veterans make for freedom. Meet the DAV flight team with the B-25 at the Joint Base Andrews Air Show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Karen Geis, the Military Health System's Acting Chief Information Officer. Now, Dr. Geis, before break, we talked a lot about the VA and DOD work on the integrated health system. There's a piece of that that was called by Roger Baker, the VA CIO, the heart of the integrated health system, which is the Enterprise Service Bus. Now, I know this is a contract that was awarded, it was canceled, it was re-awarded. I'm not going to ask you to get into all the nitty-gritty of the contract, but give me a sense about if that decision to cancel the contract, re-award the contract, what does that mean in terms of for the program more broadly? Is it going to mean a delay? Is it just means, you know, that is just part of the natural cycle of contract awards and it's just stuff you guys kind of planned for? Can you give me a broad picture?
At any time there's a protest or a contracting issue, it tends to slow down efforts to move forward. In this particular instance, I think we minimized it to the best we could. I do not believe there was a significant slowdown at all, maybe about 4 weeks delay in actually beginning the work on the ESB and the things that need to be done for the IHR.
I think that's good news because, you know, anytime you hear contract delay, you always get concerned about what it actually means. Now, the Enterprise Service Bus itself, can you give me a sense of what that is, that piece to the electronic health record?
It's one of the foundational elements. So if you think about the SOA framework, the ESB, it's really the kind of the software that helps all of this work in a coordinated way. The other significant piece of it is kind of the data layer and having common data elements and having things mean the same thing. And, of course, you know, with the Department of Defense and the Department of VA, it's making sure that the data elements that they have match with the data elements that we have so that things are defined in a consistent way so that our providers, you know, when they're asking for certain particular piece of information, it means the same thing regardless of whether you're a VA provider or a DOD provider. So that common data element definition is extraordinarily important, and we're working to make sure that we've got consistency across the two departments in that foundational piece as well. You know, some of the other foundational pieces include like order entry and things of that nature that are just kind of part and parcel to any kind of electronic health record, and making sure we have all of the little pieces in place that actually will then allow the capabilities or these applications to kind of pop into that framework. So if you have an application for pharmacy or laboratory, it is just an application that then lies within the framework or the structure of the architecture.
Very nice. Now, you brought up the idea of data, and it's basically you're referring to a taxonomy. You know, and the best taxonomy example I've ever heard is a boat. You know, when you say a boat and I say a boat, you think of a sail, I think of a motorboat, and how do we make sure we both think of the same thing? How difficult is that when it comes to health IT and healthcare to make sure that, you know, when you're saying, did you take their temperature, that means the same thing?
It's a critical foundational element. So, you know, we use a health data dictionary, and VA is now doing a matching to that health data dictionary to make sure that we've got consistency across, and then figuring out where we've got the gaps and then how to close the gaps.
How far along are you guys with that? Is it just started, or are you in the middle?
It's just started.
Okay.
It is just started.
Well, I know that the health IT is a huge, huge priority for you. What else are you working on? What are some of your other priorities you're looking to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
Some of the other things that we're doing is we are trying to make sure that we have total visibility of the MHS data systems. So, you know, making sure that as we move to this new architectural framework for all of our systems, that we have visibility of what the services are doing and what our military treatment facilities have existing within their own footprint. And that's critical because as we kind of continue to move and consolidate data, our data centers or add various pieces in a way that will help us get to the implementation of the IHR, it will matter because of the things that are currently running on one of these other systems. For instance, if someone has done a little local program that works off of Alta, making sure we understand if we turn Alta off, what happens to that little program that someone has, you know, spent time and effort and solved a problem at their local treatment facility. So we're really trying to get our hands around the entire portfolio of IT solutions to better enable our decisions as we move forward. The other thing that we've done is we've worked very hard with the services to develop a series of six, what we're calling guiding principles. And we're going to use these with every future decision we make in terms of an IM or an IT solution. So one of the first one that we thought was extraordinarily important is joint first and a common architecture. So we want to be joint first, which means we're doing joint capabilities, applications, and systems. We want to build those around common business practices and processes and data. If the Air Force or the Army or the Navy needs to develop a specific system because they have a very specific, unique need that is not shared with the other services, it will be by exception that we do that. But we think that most of our future investments can be done as with a joint approach, so that we're harmonizing better, we're pulling together better, we're using our resources in a very sustainable manner. One of the other principle that we adopted was actually to adopt, buy, or create. So what we mean there is that if we want to acquire a new capability to solve a certain problem that our providers bring to us, we're going to look first to see if we have something already existing within our portfolio that will help us solve that particular problem. So we will just repurpose one of our existing capabilities. The next one is buy. So if we can't adopt a system or an approach, we would buy a COTS product, and if there were some particular nuances, adapt that COTS product to actually meet the need. And the last would be, of course, we would create something or build it from scratch. So in order of preferences, to adopt, buy, or create. We also want to make sure that we've got transparent and accountable management. We want to make sure that we've got visibility about all the things that we're doing so that we can have traceable decisions and really understand in an archive why we chose to do things in a certain way. We think that's responsible and is something that we are accountable for taxpayer dollars. So we want to make sure that we make that best purchase decision that's smart for our organization but is also cost effective for the taxpayer. We're also driven by strategy. We want to develop our systems to comport with an overall overarching strategy for the MHS. You know, where do we need to be in 5 years? Where do we need to be together as an integrated delivery system in 5 years? How do we support that with our information technology systems, and how do we do this together across the services in a joint first environment? One of the things that we really, really want to underscore is speed to market. You know, our practitioners are out there every day working hard, taking care of patients, and we really want to deliver products to them in a timely way that they can, you know, if they've identified a problem and brought it to us looking for a technical solution, that we can identify that technical solution with their help and their support and their input, and then provide it back to them in a reasonable time period where they can go ahead and use it, and it solves the problem for which it was created.
Let me jump in. That's, I think, at least three of them that you laid out. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's look at those other three. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Karen Geis, the Acting Chief Information Officer of the Military Health System.
Do you enjoy a good laugh and want to support a great cause? Join us for Laugh Riot for Mobile Med, a night of comedy, food, and drink at the Hyatt Regency Bethesda. Nationally known comedians Chris Kosha and John Muma and Dave George will perform on Friday, May 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. $50 tickets include hors d'oeuvres and two drinks. All proceeds will benefit Mobile Med services for the uninsured. Contact info at mobilemedicalcare.org or visit the website mobilemedicalcare.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Karen Geis, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs and Acting CIO for the Military Health System. Now, Dr. Geis, before break, you're going through your six guiding principles around IT. You went through about five of them. So tell us that sixth one and tell us how this all fits together.
I'll just recap just for your listeners to remind them kind of where we were. So the first one was joint first with a common architecture. The second one was adopt, buy, and create. The third one was transparent and accountable management. The fourth one was driven by strategy. The fifth one was speed to market. And the sixth one is requirements-driven solutions. So, you know, part of our success is when we have well-defined requirements that are easy to understand by our technical people who look for that perfect solution. But it really is this strong partnership between what we call our functional community or the community of interest or the community of involvement. So these would be our providers in our case with the military health system. So what is it that they really need? What problem is it they need to solve? What kind of information do they need to have at their fingertips to take better care of the beneficiary? So making sure that we have a strong requirements part where that provider community has direct involvement with designing what the solution is, not the technical solution, but kind of that requirements-driven solution that will really give them the product that they need at the end of the day. So we want to emphasize that. We're underscoring that with the way we're approaching business, where we're going to have both our IM community, our IT community, our contracting community, and the services tightly together around each of the products that exist and that are going to be developed in the MHS from here on. That's when we have success. That's when we have the solutions that meet the needs, and we're very committed to that approach for development in the future.
I think as you went through these six principles, no one's going to scratch your head and go, wow, this is, you know, this is genius, but I think it's important to get these down and say, this is what we all agree to. How different are these six principles than what maybe was happening a year, two, 3 years ago?
I think that there's always been kind of an undercurrent of some guiding principles, but this was really getting together and agreeing on six very fundamental ones. They're not probably a surprise to any of your listeners. You know, these are common sense. They make sense for us. It does give us that sense of we're all in and this is what we're committed to. We've also agreed that if anyone runs afoul of any of the principles, it's okay to throw the red flag and say, you're violating principle number six, and hold each other accountable for meeting the principles as well. And we've used them in a limited way so far, but I can tell you it's fun and the people have bought into them. They do work, and we're looking forward to using them more and more as we move forward.
It's a basis for how you make decisions. So, for instance, if you need a new system to make widgets, it's not like, okay, let's look at principle number one. It's more like, okay, as we buy this widget, where we say we need to buy a system that does widgets. Here's how we're gonna create the requirements. How we're going to go about getting that system. Do I understand that correctly?
Absolutely. And these are kind of reminders about if we meet all of those six principles, we will have solved a problem. We will have done it in the right way. We will have engaged the right communities around that technical solution, and we will be successful.
And that, in the end, that's what it comes down to, success.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Well, I'm going to shift gears on you real quick. You have a very interesting division called the Special Projects and Research Cell in the Innovation Division. Give me a sense of what that is. How does it work? What are its goals? And specifically, can you talk a little bit about how it's addressing cybersecurity?
The Special Projects and Research Cell is part of our MHS Cyber Infrastructure Services Program Office, what we would shorten to MSIS. These are people in the MHS who keep the computers running. They are kind of the backbone of the system. They're responsible for evaluating, delivering, managing the network layer and all of that infrastructure support that keeps everything running. They provide a 24/7 service desk. They staff that with subject matter experts for all of our centrally managed applications. They just recently established this Special Projects and Research Cell, or I think we've shortened that one too and call it the SPARC. That cell is actually to identify emerging technologies that could be useful to the MHS. They then test them and then they bring them back to the enterprise as a menu of options, if you will, that might solve certain problems that or a new way to approach an existing problem. One example of that. So they're currently analyzing lightweight portable solutions, and this would be like the tablet and notebook computers, which can allow for data collection through real-time charting. You know, this is something that is new technology to all of us, but has great potential for use within the medical environment. For, you know, you can envision physicians and nurses and allied health personnel walking around a hospital with a portable tablet that where they can enter the information. It makes it easier. They don't have to keep it in their head till they get to a charting station. It could be done real time while they're standing in the patient's room. So, you know, that has a tremendous appeal to our providers. I think they would all like and think that was a value-added solution as part of the electronic health record portfolio. They're working with these devices. They want to make sure that they're secure and provide proper protection to the protected health information that would be, you know, captured on these devices. And certainly that's something that needs to be done before we deploy any type of technical or hardware within our MHS. I mean, it's just an important part of it. So they kind of work on those issues, going out looking for those innovative technologies, bringing them back, testing them in our environment, making sure that they're secure and protective of all the information that we need it to be protective of, and then offering that as solutions depending on what the problem we're trying to solve.
Now, is this something you guys go to them and say, hey, we need help with this, or do they talk to, for instance, different people within MHS and say, hey, what's your problem? You know, how can we help you? What are you trying to solve? How does it work?
It's a combination. Part of it is, you know, being present in meetings where people are puzzling through, how could we solve this particular problem? So it's listening and having that ear to pick up on, you know, these are the needs within the MHS for technical solutions. And then part of it is just finding those new cutting-edge technologies that could solve one of those problems or could solve a problem that we haven't yet identified yet, but, you know, something that's more forward-looking. So really, it's a combination of both.
Unfortunately, though, we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today was Karen Geis, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs and Acting Chief Information Officer for the Military Health System. Dr. Geis, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, thank you for the invitation.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Nominations for the third annual COSY Awards are now being accepted. If you're wondering who could be nominated, check out our past winners. 2011, Homeland Security's Maria Rote. Spearheaded front office open houses, chili cook-offs, and Team Spirit Fridays, and fostered the one OCIO approach within headquarters. Nominate someone in your office who you think has made a difference helping people work better together. Don't delay. Nominations for the third annual COSY Awards close Friday, April 6th. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search COSY Award.